Packers all the time.
He was a field-tilting player, and the reason why Gabe and many others are so concerned is that this guy's on the field, he changes the offensive dynamic. They are a different offense when he is there.
Okay, most of the time.
You know, Homer calls Matt LaFleur soft all the time. Matt LaFleur is like Vince Lombardi compared to me.
It's Jason Wilde on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
We'll get to Jason Wilde in just a moment. But Mark Chmura is back. We got the big guy, Chewy.
Hi, buddy. Bad storms last night. We fumbled the opening drive, but they fumbled it right back to us. So we're in good shape.
We got it back. We're ready to go. Hopefully Jason is ready to go here shortly as well. Do you know anything about Malik Willis? Like, when Malik Willis, you saw, we were texting about this yesterday, come across your phone, you're like, who? Malik Willis. Could you have told me that he played for the Titans?
Yeah, it was either Titans or Atlanta. I knew it was one of the two.
Okay.
He's an upgrade. Come on, Gabe.
All right. Can the Packers go 2-2 with Malik Willis?
Depending on who they play.
No, the answer's no. Chewy, the Titans moved on from this guy with a 7th-round pick. 2 years ago, instead of having him start a game that they needed to win, they decided Joshua Dobbs, who at that point had not started a game in his NFL career and had just joined the team about a week earlier, they went, yeah, we'll go with Dobbs.
Yeah, but at least he can get outside the pocket and just tell him to run. So what you do is you just kind of throw, you know, like, all right, we're getting rid of you, but you're going to get killed, but we're going to try to win the game here. So that's okay. Clifford, you can't do that.
No, I mean...
He's an athlete.
Yeah.
Right? He's a better athlete than Clifford.
Oh, he's a better athlete. He's the best athlete they have at the quarterback position.
Well, let's ask Jason. Jason will know.
Jason Wilde, he is our friend. He is our teammate. He is Jason Wilde. He joins 3 times a week here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Good morning, Jason.
I'm not sure I want to be on the show today.
What?
It's a dude Tuesday.
Yeah. What did we do?
You could you be any more of a negative Nancy about this?
I guess here's the thing, Jason.
Get him.
I don't understand it, Jason, because I don't think that this is an upgrade in any way, shape, or form. If the question is, because this is how we measure it on this show, because this is the question Chewy always asks about the backup quarterback. If Love goes down for 4 games, can you go 2-2 with whoever the backup is? And I feel my answer is the same, whether it's Willis, whether it's Pratt, whether it's Clifford, of no, they can't go 2-2. So I guess I just don't understand what the point of this move was.
It's a distressed asset who was pretty highly regarded coming out, who has probably not gotten a fair shake in Tennessee, right? So there's the John Robinson regime drafts him. This kid, you know, he starts out at Auburn and spends 2 years there, and then transfers to Liberty, sits out a year, plays, 2 years there?
Yep.
And then gets drafted, was being looked at as a potential first-round pick, ends up going in the 3rd round. Clearly struggled, right? He was clearly not ready to play as a rookie, which I know a guy like that. His name's Jordan Love. I know everyone loves the attitude of, oh, I always knew he was going to be awesome, but he wasn't always going to be awesome, right? And so Malik Willis gets drafted, is clearly not ready to play as a rookie. So then he goes out and has to play, what, 3 games? Did he start three games?
Three games, yes.
They go 1-2, but he's clearly not ready. So that's where things stand for him. They then fire John Robinson late in the year, and they go out and they get Will Levis in the next year's draft with the 33rd overall pick. The new GM, Rand Carthon, is clearly not a Malik Willis fan, which is fine. You know, you go get your guy, and Willis is not your guy. So now he spends last year with a team that doesn't really want him, with a coach that doesn't believe in him, and when they have to go win a game, as you mentioned, you know, I mean, they didn't think Will Levis was ready either, right? I mean, he ended up being the one who plays. But I just, I agree with you on this point. If you're going to go get a backup because you don't think either one of the ones you have in your camp is ready to win a game for your team if Love goes down, then Malik Willis is not any different than those two guys based on what he has proven to this point. That part I totally get. I will not debate you. I will not make fun of you. You're right. My issue with this is there's a chance that this is a guy, you know, the whole, and Chewy, you've seen this many times over the years, the whole change of scenery concept. It's a low price that they had to pay. Mm-hmm. They're going to get compensatory picks next year for Runyon leaving. And so paying a seventh round pick is not an expensive price. And they see more talent in him than they see in the other two guys they have. So if this guy doesn't have to play and they get to develop him, they think they can turn him into a player who's going to be a not maybe not even just a really good backup, but eventually maybe a tradable asset that's worth even more than the seventh round pick they paid. Your point is a very fair one, and it's the same one that I had. Now, the only thing that I would argue is that, is there a chance, you know, he was in a similar system, right, with Arthur Smith when he was, or who was the offensive coordinator after LaFleur left? Was it Arthur Smith?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
That because obviously Vrabel is a defensive guy. So maybe there's some carryover. Maybe he can build some momentum, and there's a chance that he turns out. But to your point, this is not – I do not see this as, oh, we went out and got – the example I used was Taylor Heinicke. Taylor Heinicke has started games and been effective in the NFL. And I don't know what the Atlanta Falcons' plan is for him with Kirk Cousins and with Michael Penix on their roster. But that was kind of, in my mind, and I don't want to have confirmation bias. Oh, they didn't do what I thought they should do, but that was the guy that I thought, all right, if you're going to go get somebody, he's the guy to go get because you know that he has played and played well when he has had to start games. Malik Willis does not fit that category. And so to that point, I think it's very fair of you to question. The negativism that I was hearing while I was on hold was a little more intense than I was expecting.
Jason, so what happens with Clifford and Pratt? Both gone, one on the practice squad. What do you think is going to happen there?
I think they've got to keep at least one of them, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, are you ready to have Willis, for example, be the backup in Brazil? Like, is this enough time to have him ready that, let's say something catastrophic happens, and suddenly now they have to play their backup. Is he... In what is it, 10 days? He's got 10 days before they play?
Correct.
Like, is he going to be up to speed quickly enough? I would think, and here was one thing that happened yesterday that I was really curious about, and the trade then happened subsequent to this. There was a thought that neither one of these two merited a roster spot, right? Neither Sean Clifford nor Michael Pratt. But if you cut them both and you feel confident that no one's going to pick them up, and they both get through waivers, in theory, you could put them both on the practice squad, right? And then you could do a game day elevation, whichever one you wanted to have the backup be that week. And that way, neither one is taking up a spot on your 53, but you've got two guys there and you got a backup on game day. Well, the NFLPA vetoed a rule that the NFL wanted to put in place, which was that you would have unlimited elevations for quarterbacks from the practice squad. So if that's the case, you know, maybe they thought that they could get away with that. I don't know. The way it was explained to me, it was the third quarterback, so I don't know if that would have worked. But they clearly came out of the game not feeling good about either one of these guys, and now they have to, in my opinion, keep one of them at least for the first couple weeks because otherwise – it's hard for me to fathom Malik Willis being ready if disaster strikes in Sao Paulo.
So you think they're going to carry potentially three quarterbacks?
I don't know what their intention would be. I think they're going to cut both those guys today.
And then just keep one and then elevate.
And then bring back one from the to the practice squad, elevate that guy on game day for the first game, and then or maybe not at all. I mean, and here's the other thing. If I'm Sean Clifford, maybe not Michael Pratt because he's a rookie seventh round pick, but if I'm Sean Clifford, I'm not sure I want to come back to the practice squad, right? Like, if I'm going to go to a practice squad, maybe I want to go to a different practice squad, because this is a pretty big vote of no confidence about believing in me to be the backup. So, again, I don't know what they're going to do. We'll find out at 3 o'clock, but the bottom line is that Matt LaFleur came out of that game. He had every opportunity to give votes of confidence publicly to both the kickers he had and the backup quarterbacks he had. Not to say, oh, this guy's going to be great, but to say, you know, we feel like we've got guys at both those spots that we think can be our guys. And I know there's been some ups and downs, but we think we've got some pretty good options there regardless of some of the results. That's not what he said. In both instances, he basically said, and we're going to see what else is out there, right? I mean, that was basically his answer, and we've already seen them do it at the quarterback position.
Jason, running back position, they have four backs. One, I believe, is safe in Josh Jacobs. How do you think that's going to play out?
Bold call on the Josh Jacobs being safe. Well done.
My hot take.
I don't know. You know, that's a really interesting scenario, too. I will say this. I think I'm fairly confident that Marshawn Lloyd, their third-round pick, will be put on IR. Now, they have, you know, there's a change in the rules where now you can put two guys on IR immediately at the final cutdown and then have them still be eligible to return. There's a limit of two being able to do that. So I think he's going to be one of them. The complicating factor here is what exactly does this mean for A.J. Dillon and that stinger that he's dealing with? Like, the last time he had a stinger, he missed the last three games of the season, right? So Is that going to be the case again? Is he sidelined for a couple of weeks? Because then you're down to Emmanuel Wilson, who I always want to call Emmanuel Lewis from Webster, and he's a guy who's obviously shown good things, but I know that when we asked about the idea of him, you know, being a complete back, they kind of admitted that he's not where he needs to be as a pass protector, and he's not as adept coming out of the backfield catching passes as they would like their running backs to be. So he's still, remember, he's a low division two guy. So while I think he makes the team and I think he has some really good qualities, I don't know if he's the guy that you want to be your number two back in Sao Paulo either. So this is, for a camp, this is what's weird about this. For a camp where I felt like there weren't that many spots that were up for grabs, and there wasn't really this level of, what are they going to do with this position? I thought their biggest concern was that they had too many good players. They've got all kinds of different question marks that I wasn't anticipating would make the final cutdown day as full of intrigue as I think it's going to be.
So they've already gone outside for the potential backup quarterback spot, Jason. They could go outside for a swing tackle, could go outside for the kicker. I mean, there are a lot of, to that point, for a roster that I thought was, okay, this thing's pretty settled, they're looking for a lot of outside options more than I can remember in recent history.
Yeah, my gut, and nothing more than that, I haven't talked to anybody about it. My gut is that I think Kadeem Telford is going to be there. They're going to keep him as a swing guy. Now, whether or not they also keep Andre Dillard, I'm not sure. But I think in talking to a few people, they really do like Telford, who was a big-time recruit coming out of high school and went to Florida and then, like, stole like credit card numbers or something. It was a whole thing. Ends up at UAB, but he's gigantic. And he's actually got pretty good feet from what my untrained eye can tell me. So I think he's one of those guys that kind of, not to this degree yet, but kind of like Rashid Walker, where they see something in him that is worth taking a chance on and maybe going with a guy who's not as experienced. Because the problem that let's use Malik Willis as an example, right? You don't really like your quarterback options. And so you acquired a guy who is not in any way head and shoulders better than what you had. And if you do that at kicker and you do that at swing tackle, what you're just basically doing is saying, well, somebody we don't know, maybe there's a chance he doesn't stink. Because the guys that we do know, we think kind of stink, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the newness doesn't make it better. And so, you know, I went through all 31 other teams' kicking situations the other day and trying to find, okay, who might a team move on from? And New England has two kickers. The guy that I was interested in was with the Jets. They've got Greg Zuerlein and Austin Siebert, I think his name is, who has kicked in the league before. Like, they're not going to keep two kickers with the Jets. So is there a deal to be made, or like the Cade York trade that Washington just did? I don't know. But again, if these guys become available, you have to at least acknowledge there's a reason why their team is cutting them too, right?
Yeah.
And so I just don't know if there are clear upgrades over what they have that are out there. I still, my gut says that they're just going to say, all right, Anders, we don't want to do to you what the Vikings did to your brother and then regret it. We still think you can work through this. And I think that's what I guess. But I will not in any way be surprised if they cut both of those guys and decide to go in a completely different direction.
But Jason, in your mind, who won the battle?
So here's the thing that sucks about that 32-yard miss that he had. And you know, a couple guys got on me because when he missed the kick, I said, God dang it. And I sounded like a fan because, you know, that's frowned upon in the press box. It wasn't because I'm an Anders Carlson supporter. You can't be an athlete, be an athletic supporter. It was because I had written the story that he held serve and kept his job. Because he was 22 of 25 over the last week and a half or 2 weeks of camp. Like, he was in a groove. And then he hits a 54-yarder. He makes his extra point. Like, all he has to do is put that through, and everybody's looking at him going, he's the guy, right? Mm-hmm. He's still going to have some ups and downs, but he's the guy. The problem with that kick, and I don't like making a big deal out of one kick, but I thought the issue with that, and I think what the Packers' issue is with it, is that just underscores the inconsistency, right? He can put a 54-yarder through, and then he misses a chip shot. And when a guy misses a kick at least one kick in 10 of your last 12 games, that's your thought process with him, is we're just waiting for the kick he's going to miss today. And that's what happened to him on Saturday. And that's what keeps, I'm sure, Matt LaFleur, as Tom Rinaldi reported, praying every time he goes on the field.
Jason, we certainly appreciate the time, and I know you are going to be busy today with roster cutdown happening at 3 o'clock. Look forward to hearing you on Wilde and Tausch in about 90 minutes.
And I look forward to all your positivity about the Malik Willis era. Very excited about it. All right, guys. Take care. Be good.
Jason Wilde joins us three times a week here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Chewy brought up the running back position. It's something we want to dive into as well. We do that coming up next. But the next edition of Behind the Bucks is here on the Bucks Plus Audio Network, presented by Gallagher. Buck stars share their experiences from competing on the world's biggest stage, the Olympics, from battling against their former Bucks teammates to teaming up with fierce rivals, all for the glory of a gold medal. Behind the Bucks offers unique access and deep storytelling for Bucks fans unlike ever before. Presented by Gallagher, your trusted insurance broker and HR and benefits consultant. Find it bucks.com/plus, the Bucks app, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
I mean, pumpkin seeds.
No. Little suckers. They might be. What did you say before, Jen?
Sesame but those seeds. Are white. Like,
yeah. No, white. These aren't white. No, this isn't on the outside. This is on the inside.
Seeds on the inside.
Oh, yeah. So you've got some sort of, like,
scrotum.
On 94.5 ESPN.